Welcome to the Great Awakening Show. I am Joanne, Divine Life Yogini, and on this week's show, we have Autonomy Hotline. Autonomy Hotline are a small team of independent specialists with experience in advocacy, law, medical treatment, ethics, human rights, family life, parenting, psychology, counseling, and natural health. They look at aspects of healthcare in different ways, using a range of skills to tackle injustices and issues of injustice and ensuring that people are listened to when it comes to disagreements with professionals about what they need for their well-being. Nikki has a MA in bioethics and medical law from St. Mary's University, Twickenham. She has interests in patient-professional relationships, gender aspects of healthcare, consent, vaccines, and children's rights. Nikki has always supported natural parenting styles, often advocating for parents' choices with birth, breastfeeding, and natural approaches to health. Medical ethics was a natural progression from breastfeeding and parent support. Sarah is a doula and home educating mum with incredible knowledge of care and treatment to advocating on rights in education and everything else in between. Sarah is a major support on Autonomy Hotline and for many of the parent calls that the hotline takes. You can listen to the Great Awakening Show and all 42 UK health radio shows as a podcast on Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Music, Alexa, and many more. Links are in the description. UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Ladies from Autonomy Hotline, I know that you're so busy and you're doing such amazing work. And I just want to thank you so much for being on the Great Awakening Show today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Brilliant.
It is.
Thank you so much from your busy schedules, because I know that you're just helping so many people. So let's get going with the questions. I've got all the questions, and at the end of the questions, we're going to go in and you can both tell me all about Autonomy Hotline and, you know, everything that there is to go through it. So this is a Great Awakening Show, and I believe that humanity is going through a great awakening. So what does this mean for you, Nikki? What does this mean for you and for us all? Let's go you first and then Sarah.
Yeah. So when you said those questions to me, what was reeling through my mind, I think as I've had a deep-rooted Christian faith for a long time, and I found the whole COVID thing extremely concerning, with the way that churches were just falling in line with what the government wanted, when actually the Bible calls us to be like more than that. In actual fact, obedience to God sometimes means being disobedient to man. In actual fact, I found the whole thing really scary in that youth groups were closed. Churches didn't meet, and that's a direct instruction against what the Bible instructs. You know, we're supposed to meet each other. We're supposed to sing to God. We're supposed to meet and sing and pray, and we couldn't do those things. We didn't do those things. So the Great Awakening for me was a real sadness, a real heaviness that actually was grief seeing the churches closing. And yet in the midst of that closing and youth groups cancelling and the, you know, difficulties of the Christian gospel being spoken, was this little ripple of seeds and shoots and new life kind of coming out of that, where people started asking questions and talking about God and faith and spirituality when they probably hadn't even thought about it before.
Yes.
So on the one hand, there was this deep, deep grief, like really, really deep grief about what had happened. I did see the seeds of hope that were springing out as well, the conversations that wouldn't happen, the networks that started building from people with You know, it's not a Christian faith, but it's a faith, it's a spirituality, it's a movement. There is definitely some kind of great awakening, but it did break my heart at the same time that the very people that were called to that awakening had lost their edge, had lost their message. So that was what it meant for me. That was my personal message.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And that was so true as well. You know, and Sarah, please, how do you see this great awakening? How is it for you, and how do you see it for the
My awakening is not dissimilar to Nikki's, but I'm actually a practicing pagan and a practicing witch. But I've got lots of friends who are in so many different faiths and so on. That was one thing I noticed that really broke everybody, was this lack of connection and community. And again, watching pagan moots being disbanded, I was like, what? That none of it made any sense. But then equally, from the ashes rose the phoenix. And what I did notice was that seeing all these people sort of who were questioning, who might not have been brought together otherwise, were all sort of saying, well, hold on a minute. And people were finding renewed faith, or they were finding a new faith. And you know, it kind of brought a lot of people together, and it brought a lot of people to a very humble point of knowing that we are all the same, and that we were all suffering together, and how important and crucial being humane is. And I think it brought a lot of people to a point where they saw the genuine struggles of everyday people. Like for me, like I'm a single mum, and I actually home ed, so sometimes it can be quite a lonely path. But suddenly everybody was forced to homeschool, and they were forced to be with their children for a prolonged period of time without a tribal community. And a lot of people were like, oh wow, that's intense, and they saw what it can be like. So yeah, it's I do think that we've got a lot of awakenings going on though.
Definitely. And as you said, you know, it's an awakening of like us as people coming together, going through this, and having our, it's like a unity, the unity consciousness and the love awareness that is coming through this. It's like this brotherly, sisterly feeling of all of us being together, you know, being controlled by these people who may not have our best interests at heart, let's just say. You know, and why should they dictate to us, you know, and shut down things that are so meaningful for us, and that are the meaning of humanity, aren't they? That's what community is all about, you know, us coming together. So, yes, very very strange times, very challenging, but very enlightening.
It's a paradox. There's like both at the same time, and that's what's the struggle plus the survival instinct. It's the paradox of life. It has to merge with both in order to find the meaning from it. Anyway,
that's right, that's so true. And so leading on from that, because our human rights were taken away from us, were they not, in that time?
Absolutely. Yeah,
it was absolutely terrible. Why is it our human right to resist coercion and have autonomy over our well-being, our social care, and our health at this time? So many people just leave it up to the doctor. I mean, I never go to the doctor, but so many people, you know, they rely on that. And this is a time, this great awakening is about our health. This is about our autonomy. So why is it so important to resist that coercion? Because that's what they were doing.
They were. Who wants to go first? Do you want to go first?
I
want to
go, Sarah. You're itching to go. I can tell.
Go, yeah.
Yes, me too. Well, sorry, it's something that we talk about so often. It's like the absolute core of what we do. And before I worked for the hotline, I sometimes still do doula work. So obviously my whole entire life has been dedicated to families, people, and resisting coercion. And I often think about how often people just go, oh yeah, whatever. But I thought about through COVID, people who have little choice actually, because of they've got ongoing health needs, or that they had to, they wanted to resist, but resisting would have meant that either they were in, you know, vast pain, or they weren't getting surgery, or they weren't getting something that they absolutely desperately needed. So it's all very well healthy people, and thankfully, you know, I'm largely healthy, being able to resist. But there was a point where I was deeply concerned about maybe accessing like public transport, for instance. Yes. Because of course the whole mask thing, and like, what if the bus wouldn't let us on, or what if we couldn't go somewhere, or what if we couldn't come home, and all those kinds of things. And I think for a lot of people in poverty, they're not used to being able to resist and coerce, but it did bring a lot of people like that together. It's not always a privileged, well, I've got money for a lawyer sort of situation. But I think what we see on the hotline a lot of is people who are deeply bonded in trauma, who don't know how to resist and know that social work have got a huge amount of power over their lives. And the courts have got a huge amount of power over what they do and don't do. And that's really difficult to get people out of this trauma cycle so that they can speak up for themselves. And I think that's a lot of what we do.
Wonderful. Yes. This is a real time. And the same question, you know, why, you know, resisting coercion is a human right. Is it not? It's it our is. Body. It's yeah, our absolutely. Life. It's our choice.
I'm going to take this a slightly different angle. So I got a master's in medical ethics, and we looked a little bit about sort of different philosophers and their approaches. There's a philosopher called Immanuel Kant. So if you ever come across Kantism, it's because of Immanuel Kant. And, you know, different philosophers have lots of different kind of theories that create what they, you know, believe. But one of the aspects of Kant, I'm not saying the whole thing was great, but there was one particular bit. He said a categorical imperative, which sounds a bit gobbledygook and probably is to most people, but basically that meant that there was certain things that the society had to do, categorical imperatives, like not lying or not murdering or whatever it is. You know, could look at the Ten Commandments as kind of a categorical imperative for that society at that time. And Kant was looking at it from the sort of, I think it was 17th century or something like that. Numbers and dates don't really fix in my head. But anyway, there was this guy, Kant, around that time. And he said, you know, society has to do a certain number of things, otherwise it falls apart. Now, I'm sort of reflecting on that a lot since I started the work that I'm doing now. And what I would say is that coercion and the use of power when it's not wanted is a form of that breaking trust, which is almost reflected in what Kant said. But I see society fall apart as a result. It's one of the things you really shouldn't ever do if you want to build trust with somebody, if you want to work with somebody, if you want honest consent from somebody, that builds trust. But coerced consent, or, you know, coerced treatment, is a way of undermining that trust. And what you have is the negative effect of that is what we're seeing on the hotline with every single story and every single case. That erosion of trust means society falls apart. What have we got? We've got broken trust, systems that don't work, society that's crumbling, a government that doesn't care for its citizens, and everything is about this coercion and power struggle that is completely destroying the way government should be ruling over with its people. So I see this, I'm absolutely passionate that coercion is this root that needs to be driven out of these professional structures, because it doesn't work, it doesn't help, it doesn't heal, it doesn't create, it doesn't do anything but ruin and destroy lives. Exactly. So I could talk about coercive power all day, because it's the thing I've analyzed so carefully, and I haven't read an awful lot about it. I mean, the views I have are purely observational, purely from what I've seen, what I've experienced. But I would say Kant was bang on when society had to create moral norms and moral codes that we've kind of slipped from because we're not a Christian society anymore. Mm. However, we do have the Human Rights Act. Mm. And I think that was Kant's, that's the modern equivalent of Kant's code. And we also have certain laws and ethical codes that doctors and social workers should follow. And that also is a sort of Kantism, if you like, that there's a moral-ish norm that professionals should abide to. And if they don't abide to those, they're the microcosms that they exist within fall apart. And that is exactly what I see on a daily basis. I'm sure you'd agree with me, Sarah.
Yes, it's terrible, isn't it? It's so bad. And how, you know, how the government, especially about the COVID-19 healthcare, you know, the provisions and the vaccines, you know, they were entirely voluntary, but they came over from the government and so coerced. The coercion was just terrible. You know, the push for it was so bad. And I was just watching this clip from the Australian government, and they are now telling their citizens, and they were one of the worst countries to be forced into getting
the vaccination,
right? And the government, he was saying, oh, it's not our fault. You were the one who took it. You were the one.
Typical
and
drama.
All these citizens are just going, they are so angry. There was interviewing. They was, because they were forced into it. They were taken away from their jobs. They weren't allowed to go to places. They, you know, they was even forced into some camps over there as well. And yeah. I was just like, now they're turning all around and blaming the people.
So if you want a little bit on that, interestingly, we do a lot of work with domestic abuse victims, and I think abuse victims are the first to identify coercive power because they're the ones that were immediately trapped by it, and a double blow to the, you know, those victims. And what I would say is that they saw that coercion. There is a tactic that abusers use called DARVO, deny, attack, reverse, victim, offender, and we see it all the time, especially in legal proceedings and professionals. They flip the truth back on, they flip it back onto the victim, reverse victim offender. So you hear exactly what Australians do, and professionals do it, governments do it. They flip the actual truth around and blame the victim. But therefore, and it's a real challenge to deal with, isn't it, Sarah? When we get cases where that is flipped about and twisted in the paperwork, but people get really angry. The victims then also become an extra victim on top when that anger is then also turned on itself. So you see this endless cycle of victim and damage. And, you know, because of what we see on the hotline and this coercive power, the victims that we get are often those that completely identified with the coercive power of the governments during COVID because they had seen it. And that is also parallel to what governments did, is very abusive,
yes.
Much like the controlling powers of an abuser.
Yes.
So we've got all this. Yes, it really was. So again, another reason to keep away from coercion and to be very careful, you know, for those in leadership or professional roles, is because coercion can be a form of abuse. And
yes.
that power over somebody else is just wrong.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Have you got something to add to that, Sarah?
Well, just thinking, there was a meme going around when it was right in the midst of the whole sort of vaccine. Like, the vaccine hadn't been out for very long and lockdown was in pretty harsh force. And it was comparing an abuser with what the government were asking people to do. And it said, like, if this were your partner or like a friend's partner, what would you say to them? And it said something like, you know, like you'd tell them to leave or you would help them to leave. He said, but that's not an abusive partner, that's your government. And it was like this, it was very clever. And I posted that and I had a couple of friends who, they were on the fence, and I just said, like, really think about what this is bringing you and, you know, what it is that you hope to gain and what it is that you will not gain, you know. And we sort of had to sit down and really break it down about what it was that, you know, the thought they were getting. And, you know, and I had a few friends where, you know, they were really worried about, and then, but well, they were worried about getting the vaccine, but then they're really worried about not getting the vaccine. But most of all, they weren't worried about, like, getting COVID. They were worried about the medical professionals in their lives making their life hard or punishing them in some fashion.
Yes.
And that was really hard to sort of work through and witness. When you secretly want to scream, please don't. But knowing that, you know, ethically you can't just do that, and you have to sort of say, well, you have to help them understand what it is that they're gaining.
I mean, look at all the doctors and the and the nurses, you know, and the medical professionals who were coercing more, you know, it's like top down. I mean, it's just awful, isn't it? And now so many people are not well from this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimising your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
The station that makes you feel good.
I found the hardest bit for me was watching how the care workers were forced out of jobs, and they're not the ones with the most power to challenge it. And then as soon as it went to the doctors and nurses, they started building better cases and challenging it. And that's when things, the sort of nuances of how effective the vaccine really was started to come out. But it was only up when it got to the level of medical personnel that was challenged. So thousands of carers without the funds to challenge and without the resources, you know, and mostly women. So this is a gender issue. This is an equality issue that we should all be paying attention to. You know, they're the ones that got sacked. How much power did they have? How much power really is in the hands of women at the bottom of the ladder in the care industry, looking after loved ones? Minimum wage. You know, and we managed to get a few of the employment agencies to kind of pay attention, but it was slow. It wasn't until it hit those higher up with better incomes, you know, that then people started to challenge it, and it was dropped out. But I had a client who was suicidal at that point, nearly lost her job, managed to just cling on to it for a fraction of a second, you know, missed one of the meetings where she was going to be fired. And by the time it went to the next one, the mandates had gone, you know. But this is what we were facing. People's lives were in danger, livelihoods. And, you know, it's not a surprise that people were forced and felt coerced and just felt they had to go along with it because they did not have the power and control over their lives that somebody higher up did. And that angered me so deeply that I could not understand how a government could let these people who were in caring roles succumb and be treated in that manner. That was appalling.
If you don't get it, you don't have a job. That is absolutely disgusting.
Diabolical.
You know, and that is, isn't that a ghost against everything that that humanity lives for? You can't put something into, make someone put something into their body if they don't want to. You know, that is the Nuremberg Code over again, isn't it? You know, it's just terrible. It really is. It's just awful. And, you know, I mean, let's just go on. And I want to hear now. Your ladies we've been talking about it. But what is Autonomy Hotline? Tell us about Autonomy Hotline, because this is so innovative. We don't have things. It's like, we're talking about autonomy of the body, but it's autonomy of your body, mind and soul. Autonomy of everything, isn't it?
It really is.
You know, of your finances, of your children, of your, of everything around. Mm-hmm. So tell us exactly what it is and how people, you know, how they can phone up for it. Yeah.
Shall I start, Sarah?
my baby.
So after I did my dissertation in medical ethics, I was actually researching the family court for my master's. And then I handed it in just before the second lockdown. I went through this kind of phase of not really knowing where I was going or what I was doing. It was sort of a bit of a wallowing patch, you know, just, oh, I don't know what to do. And then I had this, you know, this might sound a bit crazy, but I had a dream. And I was in kind of a hospital setting, and there was a poster on the wall saying the Autonomy Hotline. And I was like, I think that's for me. this wasn't a name that I felt I had. I was gifted it, but it wasn't something that I kind of created myself. This is like, it's really felt a calling, and I woke up with this incredible feeling. But it did take a long time to kind of figure out the steps. I was kind of like, God, can I, you know, just tell me what to do? That would be great. But yeah. I had to really wrestle with a lot of the facts. You know, trying to get a phone line and get the domain name, and it hit loads of little bumps in the road. It's been a real slow process. So I think so now we came across Sarah. So Sarah, I've known for a long time online, but more as acquaintances. And then I have this case, and I was like, Sarah, do you want to come on board? She'll tell her own version of that story. Lovely. In a minute, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And she's been with me ever since. So let's say crazy-ish people doing some really good stuff with people. And it's been a brilliant, brilliant journey. Sarah's been there from almost the beginning and has really encouraged me and supported everything and just been like my second in command. She's just amazing. We've got Lauren and John Rogers, and we've got a few new people as well that just bring this amazing team together. So, you know, that was over 2 years ago now that I started. Basically, it started really with a couple of the parents that I interviewed from my research, and I carried on supporting them and kind of expanded as into more of a bit more support for a few more people found me. And then I've started to advertise the hotline on social media a bit. And right now I don't need to advertise at all because I have so many clients and so many cases, but they're all interesting. Every day there's a different call, a different case. We've got people in court. We've got people negotiating medical treatment. There's the blood transfusion issue for some, medical coercion in sort of maternity settings. What's really unique about the Autonomy Hotline that doesn't seem to be anyone else that's doing it is when I think about autonomy, I think of all the various facets in my life which sometimes collude and come together and twist and turn, and it's a combination of factors that give you your autonomy. And so what we look at is a unique kind of tool that looks at the whole range of a person's autonomy and experiences, and a lot of the trauma and where it's coming from and the sources of power and control. So sometimes there will be, so usually we deal with medical and family court, but actually realistically there's a lot of finance in there. There's domestic abuse in there, working with the police, there's medical stuff, education and schools. Like, nothing is separate. And this is the thing with most other services, it's usually one specific thing that comes to the forefront, and they can only really deal with that one specific thing because a specialist in that one specific thing. Whereas I'm looking at somebody's life and the struggle that they're finding themselves in as the entire picture, because otherwise you don't have any grasp or any solution to their case if you ignore all the other little facets. You can't really untangle it. So we take a full case history and we look at all the aspects, and we will then liaise with other partners who might have more, you know, finance or education or whatever it is. But we try and keep most of the communication with our with our advocate. So we assign an advocate to their case who takes on the bulk of that communication. They then liaise with other professionals as and when they need to, try and attend meetings and write letters. And so I generally just kind of leave them to it. You know, that's the relationship they build. They handhold and walk that journey together. What we don't do is we don't tend to signpost somewhere else, which other groups do, because it's too traumatic. You have to open up your journey again and again and again, and someone just says, well, no, we don't do that, we don't do that, you need to go to that one. And that one says, well, we don't really deal with that, so you've got to go to that one. And that's one of the real downfalls of advocacy in the UK, is that no one really takes that whole picture with all the trauma and all the heartache that goes around from pillar to post and pillar to post, and all the solicitors letting you down, social workers letting you down. Oh, right, okay, we have a package of story that you need handholding through 5 or 6 different things that overlap. And I think that's where the service is really strongly like coming into its own, where it's very simple. We just assign an advocate, and then they have to unpick that person's case and walk with them. And that really is it. But it's not like anything else I've seen elsewhere.
Wow.
Because protecting that autonomy just means to walk alongside with someone, supporting them and upholding their autonomy with them.
And so Autonomy Hotline is for anyone has a problem. Tell us the different areas that you mainly focus on. I know it's like, you know.
All of it.
Yeah. I think we specialise mainly in where medical issues cross over into family and law, not exclusively. I mean, Sarah, do you want to share some of your experiences and share a little bit about what maybe you started with and where you've ended up?
Whoa. Okay, so it's been a hell of a ride. Nikki was telling us, everyone, about the hotline. I was like, oh, that looks really interesting. So I was like, oh, maybe I could just give a couple of hours. I feel a bit lost in life and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was like, oh, everything's just a bit. Ugh. So I took on a easy maternity case, and it didn't turn out to be easy. And we walked through it. And we got to the end, and it was, you know, it was a ride. It really was. But I find that the best advocates literally get assigned a tricky case, and they either sink or swim. And if they can swim, great, they'd be an awesome advocate. And I think that is where we are unique as well, is that because we can all support each other, we try not to worry too much about like having vast experience or vast qualifications. Is that so qualification would be that you care enough about somebody's autonomy, that they, you know, that they're getting a fair deal. And then, you know, we're all really,
they know their rights. They know their rights as well. They know, you know, people don't know.
So we're all like, we'll ring each other and we'll be like, oh my goodness, you know, we need some help with this. Or does anybody know the legislation for that? So we will all support each other, and we are, you know, we are a community network. We are all together, and, you know, we'll be frantically texting each other in meetings going, oh my God, you know, it's so bad. And, you know, we, there's nothing we don't deal with. I mean, like, we're dealing with debt right now because, you know, we've got a lady who's in serious debt, and, you know, it's stemming from domestic violence, but she's in serious amounts of debt. Or we've got somebody else who's, you know, in court and no one's sort of hearing her side of the story. Or we get a lot of education cases, particularly through COVID and lateral flow tests and exams and the kids going in and not being vaccinated. And, you know.
We've got a guy homeless at the moment. So he came to me through the family court. He lost contact with his children. But his whole world fell apart. So he lost his job. His mental health was rock bottom. So you see, like, all these layers: mental health, homelessness, finance, job loss, medical issues because of his conditions, and family court. But they all connect. Okay. Like, you can't separate them.
Yeah.
Need put into impossible. We get people who are put into really difficult situations because of family court. So, like, they might have lost their job because of their mental health's really low, or you know, like they've had to leave their home so they no longer have work available to them. And it's the way that it all breaks down in like a chain, I suppose, for them. But because nobody deals with the big picture, people only deal with these little tiny things. So be like, oh, for money advice, you need to ring this one, but you've got no guarantee that one's going to be good. And then for like housing advice, you need to go here. Mm. But, you know, the housing advice helplines are incredibly under-resourced. Yeah. And they're just not, they don't even have a helpline anymore.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think this one is to you, Sarah, because you're a doula, aren't you? Why is it important for pregnant women to understand that midwifery and health visiting services and going into a hospital to have your birth is not mandatory, you know? Because so many women think, oh, I've just got to go there, you know? When it's you know, it's so normal to us to know that there are other alternatives. But so many women don't think that. They think that they've got to go and have, you know, a hospital birth.
So I think that it's become now the generational norm. I mean, I had an accidental home birth 21 years ago. And I've got hip problems. So I was literally told from the get-go, nope, you're having a cesarean. There was no options presented to me. And then it was just like, oh, you're having a cesarean. We booked it for this day. And I was like, oh, because no option was presented to me, it just felt like that's what I had to do. And I was aching and aching and aching. I wanted, you know, to listen to my, you know, my hippie chanty music, and, you know, I wanted a beanbag to lay on, and I wanted
natural
the whale
herbs.
Music.
Natural.
Yeah, I wanted the full experience, you know. And I can remember my mum just laughing at me. She was just like, I don't know what the hell is wrong with you. I don't know. I don't know what on earth is wrong with you. And I was like, well, you know, my inner soul was like, nothing's wrong with me. Of course, like if you think maybe like three generations now have had hospital births. Yeah. So nobody remembers women having home births. And 21 years ago, I made the local paper because it was so, you know, oh my goodness, this lady had a home birth. And I was like, well, actually, nobody answered the phone. And yes, my baby was born on the sofa, but, you know, yes, okay. And because it always is such a drama, like women have a baby in a car because they insist that they go in. And midwifery now is just so, it's clinical. It's not, you know, with women anymore. You're not with women anymore. And I remember I had had the home birth, and again, I didn't know I could refuse to be transferred in. So then I had to transport minutes after giving birth, and that was the most hellish part of it. And everyone's like, oh my God, you know, you had a baby at home. Such a weirdo. Because I had another baby 6 years later, and I was just like, just looked at the midwife, and I'm having this baby at home.
Yeah.
And she went, oh no, we'll have to check that, dear. So I was like, you can check what you like, but
yeah,
not moving. Yeah. And when I went into labor, I just, the polite version of was, I'm not moving. There were many other words attached to that, but it was,
of course.
And then I had three births after that. So, of course, I went into doulaing just after he's 15 in a couple of weeks, was born. And, you know, it was all, it became quite a movement. And it was, became really popular to, you know, explore that. And I think it's really important because I think that giving birth is an experience, and it should be an experience that doesn't traumatize you. Mm. And it should be an experience that, you know, is a genuine bond between you, your partner, and your child. And it should be a genuine, you know, that you can look at that baby and think, yeah, I did that.
And it's so important, isn't it? The moment that child comes into, you know, this world, and not be taken away, you know, and all these medical things done to it, it should go straight onto the mother. And, you know, even laying down while giving birth is ridiculous. It's so stupid. You know, I gave birth, you know, four times on a stool, you know, my partner at the back of me, squatting position, like the women do in India, hanging onto a tree and giving birth You know, it's just normal and natural. I think they've taken the everything that is normal and natural out of it in that hospital environment.
Yeah, I mean, I gave birth like hanging off the windowsill, same thing, on my knees, on the windowsill like that, looking at the moon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it just, that's what felt good. And I can remember going to, I've never been to antenatal classes, which, you know, everyone sort of finds quite amusing, but I just couldn't bear the thought of any of it. And I can remember like friends at like who were pregnant at the same time, oh, the midwife said I need to do this, the midwife said I need to do that. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
when you don't.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I'll just be cracking all over here then.
Yeah. I mean, it's not mandatory. That's a big thing. You can choose a natural birth. You can choose, you can, you know, choose to birth anywhere you wish. It's your body. It's your baby. It's your environment. You know, and it's a rite of passage, I think, giving birth. It's an empowering time.
It's that red tent tribal notion.
Yes.
We've lost such a crucial part of the female community where you've got other women genuinely saying, you know, you can do this. And like being, like, I sort of consider like, still doulaing like a community doula rather than, you know, and like wise women, you know, sort of saying, yes, to you, yeah, you know, you got this, you can do this, it's okay.
Yes. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And there's, I'm just interested, there's all these other questions as well. So, Nikki, how can we, how can parents, because this is a really important one, because parents' rights are really just, well, they're becoming non-existent at the moment, aren't they? How can parents protect their children through family law?
You know, ooh, that's a really good one. I have lots of conversations about this. So I will tell you now, the UK doesn't recognise parents' rights. Okay? Yeah? No, this is a shock to everybody. Yeah? Okay, so this is not something new. This is something historic. This is not something that's gradually come into the forefront, okay? There isn't anything in UK law that says parents' rights, Okay, so just hold that into perspective here for just a moment. There is a place for this. The parents exist for the sake of the child, so it's the child's rights. Okay, so parents' rights are not at the forefront of decision making when it comes to what happens to the children. And this is what is so important to remember when you're dealing with people. Like, I've got to be really careful now, because there's a lot of people going to be listening to this who are the kind of clients that we get all the time. Okay, so I'm well used to it, and I understand the mentality, and I, you know, I am one of them. Okay, I'm one of those parents, and I wanted certain things for my child, and it, you know, I had a child who was in hospital, and I had to fight for those things, and I got weird looks, and I got accused, and I got a doctor lying about me, and I nearly had my child and my whole family removed, and it was awful. And I had to go away and research that and find out why. And part of the mentality of this kind of, let's say, consciousness, awake movement, you know, ethical living, whatever it is, there's different labels for it. There isn't one that really fits. I'm going to say awake movement for now. Mm. One of the problems is this awake, with the awake movement, and it kind of fits in with autonomy, but it's this kind of my rights, my life. Okay, now one of the things that I do teach on the autonomy hotline is that autonomy only exists as far as other people can grant it. And sometimes you need to put your autonomy aside in order to grant it again, in order to find it again. Because we do live in connection with others, and we do to some extent are dependent on the state and society in which we are currently living.
Yes.
And unless you can root yourself up and go and live in a desert island, that's not always possible for those that have more limited autonomy. It might be possible for a group to find a piece of land somewhere and set up as their own. But at this moment in time, right now, we live with a certain number of rules in a certain society. And one of those rules is that parents don't have any rights. Okay. What we do have, however, I'll come back to the point I made about Kant. If we do have Human Rights Act, which have parents' rights written in a kind of coded language, if you like. So parents do have rights under the Human Rights Act for privacy, for protection of rights and autonomy and views and speaking, and all those things that we view as parents' rights are really deeply rooted in the Human Rights Act. But you have to tread carefully with the Human Rights Act, because not everything is straightforward when it comes to quoting it, especially if you find yourself in a dilemma with a social worker or a medical professional. The Human Rights Act will only be enabled as far as the rights of others within the Human Rights Act. So the rights to life, you know, and this is where the vaccine issue gets really murky, as people see the right to life for others more important than your right to choose for yourself. So it's about playing these different things off when you get into a scenario, which is why it's really important to perhaps give us a call or use an advocacy service elsewhere, whatever, what's more comfortable for you. And we're not saying we're the only ones. There are other groups out there. But if you can tap into that, because you've got to use careful language in order to not be perceived as the red flag. If you start marching into some of these situations and saying it's my right, and my choice, and my child, you will get shut down. So one of the things that, yeah, so one of the things we look at is these dynamics within power struggles within, like, the different professionals involved, which will stake a claim over a child's life and a family's life because they perceive a parent to be a risk.
Right.
And actual fact, I don't see these parents as risks. I see them beautiful, wonderful, caring, amazing individuals. However, I do make a point of saying how people come across in a certain dynamic, which is why you've got to be very careful on how you speak and how you present yourself. And having a second person there actually helps everyone stay calm. Mm. I call myself the doula of the legal world. So much like a doula comes alongside somebody,
yeah,
and helps them through that trauma, I see us as really just coming alongside people and assisting them with that process of becoming something that other people wow. can't there.
Well, honestly, ladies, what you're doing is so absolutely needed at this time. And, you know, your voluntary work and just setting up the autonomy hotline is just absolutely wonderful. And just to help so many people is so needed. It's so needed. So I just want to say, Sarah and Nikki, thank you for being on the Great Awakening Show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Wonderful.